Hey guys, welcome to the Filming with Josh podcast. I'm your host, Joshua Milligan, and this is episode number 109, A Case Against Image Stabilization.
This is the Filming with Josh podcast, brought to you by Rustic River Media. Welcome to the videographer's home for tips, tricks, and how to make flicks.
Thanks for listening in to another episode of Filming with Josh podcast. If you are new to the podcast, Filming with Josh is your home for tips, tricks, and how to make flicks. Here on the podcast, we talk about all things video, from script writing and storyboarding to how to price your work. We cover it all in this podcast. We also have a Facebook group called Filming with Josh, so be sure to go over to Facebook, type in Filming with Josh, and ask to join the group today. The Filming with Josh Facebook group is a private group where you can come, share your work, ask for feedback, pay attention to news updates and camera gear releases, look at behind-the-scenes video clips that I post of projects I'm working on. You can ask questions, things like that. So be sure to go to Facebook and ask to join that group today. We'd love to see you there. If you are listening to this podcast, just note that we are available on YouTube as of earlier this year. And if you are watching us on YouTube, please note that we are also available on Apple, Spotify, and Podbean. It has been a little while since I've done an episode, like 3 or 4 weeks, and it has not been intentionally. I've just been swamped. This year has been crazy busy in a really, really good way. I was a little uncertain of what to expect this year because it's an election year, and a lot of times during election years, businesses tend to clamp down a little bit, watch their spending a little bit because there's some uncertainty in the market. And I was kind of expecting that to happen this year. Maybe it's still going to happen. I hope not. But so far that has not been the case. This has been one of the best starts to a year I've ever had since I've been in business. So it's been awesome. But I've been on the road a lot. I've been traveling around shooting a bunch of different projects and have just been staying crazy busy. Plus, we're getting really close to tax week, and I have been getting some things taken care of there. I hate taxes, especially when it comes to being a small business owner, and especially in a business like this where there's a lot of different transactions happening. There's a lot of questions on what can or can't you tax, and it's just so much, and I can't stand it, but every year, we've got to do what we got to do, right? So I'm excited for that to come to a close, but between the taxes and me being on the road a bunch, I just haven't had time to do a podcast, so I apologize for that. But I'm here today, and I want to do an episode about a case against image stabilization, and the reason why I want to do this episode is because I had a video play on a couple of bigger screens earlier this week for a banquet or fundraising event, and we'll get into why it bothers me, but I want to present to you why image stabilization isn't the have-all be-all, and it has a place. I used it for a project recently, the project that I just mentioned, but I try not to use it when possible, and today I'm going to explain to you why, and hopefully through this podcast, encourage you to not lean on image stabilization unless you absolutely have to. So to do this podcast right, I want to jump back to kind of earlier in my career and start from there. Toward the beginning of my career, it's about like 12, 13 years ago, I very first started out with a Sony Handycam, and then eventually, actually that might have been 2024? That might have been 14 years ago. I don't know. It's been a while. But I started with this Sony Handycam, and it had image stabilization built into the lens. And then when I got my first professional video camera, which was like an ENG-style video camera that had a built-in servo zoom, that camera, which was called a Sony AX2000, it had image stabilization in the lens. And so my first couple cameras had image stabilization, and I was really used to being able to just grab those cameras and go shoot handheld and have decent, non-shaky results. When I started moving over to my first interchangeable lens cameras, I had the Sony A-mount, this is before E-mount, the Sony A-mount A77 and A99, and those had a digital image stabilization. And what it did is it cropped into the sensor a little bit and would stabilize the motion using a digital process. And so it wasn't IBIS, it wasn't Lens-IS, it was just image stabilization that was done digitally in cam. And I, again, was used to having that. So the first several cameras I had in my career all had some form of image stabilization, so I was really used to it. When the A7S came out, Gen 1, I bought that as an early adopter, and it did not have any form of image stabilization at all. It didn't have IBIS. It didn't have that digital image stabilization that the A-mount cameras had. It didn't have any of that. And all of my glass at the time was Sony A-mount glass, and none of those lenses had image stabilization either. So all of a sudden, I was working with a camera that had no image stabilization. And the A7S was small. I mean, all mirrorless cameras, for the most part, are really small. The A7S was especially small. And so when you take a small camera that doesn't have much weight to it, and it doesn't have IBIS, and it doesn't have digital image stabilization, and none of the lenses have it either, you can imagine my footage was extremely shaky, unacceptably shaky, and I had a hard time with that. It was really a challenge for me, and I would try to use warp stabilization to fix it in post, but as we all know, that's not always perfect, and a lot of times creates the warping effect. So what I ended up having to do was try to find a lens that had image stabilization, and throughout that process, I started learning that there were not a lot of options for image stabilized lenses, especially when it came to quality glass. Most of the lenses I found that had image stabilization were usually like kit lenses, and except for long glass, you know, some of the longer lenses had it, but that was really it. And at the time, Sony didn't have their G Master lenses or anything like that. They didn't even have the 24-105. So what I ended up doing was buying this 24-70 f/4 Zeiss lens. And prior to that, I also had already owned a 24-70 2.8 Zeiss lens in Sony A-mount, and that was an expensive lens, and it was beautiful. This 24-70 f/4 Zeiss lens that I bought in E-mount for my A7S that had image stabilization, it was not a pretty lens. Like it was an okay lens, but it would be what I would call a utility lens. It'd get the job done, but you didn't buy it for its optics, right? And I hated the manual focus on it too. It was that classic fly-by-wire design. The faster you turn the focusing ring, the more change would happen. You know, nothing was repeatable. So I hated that lens, but it was the only lens that Sony had at the time for E-mount in the mid-range zoom category that had image stabilization. And then finally, the A7S II came out and it had IBIS, and that was my first time ever working with sensor-based image stabilization. The R2 had come out before that and it already had IBIS, but I skipped the R2 and went straight to the S2. Eventually, I did get an R2, but anyway, my point is once I got the A7S II, I was like, oh, thank goodness, I have image stabilization again, and I don't have to have this 24-70 f/4, so I sold that f/4 lens immediately and went back to using my faster 24-70, which was a much prettier lens, and I had image stabilization, and I loved it. And for the next several years of my career, all I worked with was cameras that had IBIS. Well, in 2016, I bought the FS7, and that was my first camera that was a legit cinema camera, and it did not have any sort of IBIS or image stabilization at all whatsoever. So I had to go back to learning how to shoot without image stabilization. But fortunately, the FS7 is a big, chunky camera, right? And so I was able to shoot with non-stabilized lenses and still get pretty good results. And it was about this time in my career where I started to understand the pitfalls of image stabilization. And over the next 8 years, like 2016 when I bought my first FS7 to now, over these last 8 years, I have, as I've matured in my career, every year seen more and more and more the pitfalls of image stabilization, whether it's IBIS, Lens-IS, etc. And now that I can see the problems with it, I can't unsee it. And that's kind of what I want to talk about today. You know, when you're working with a small camera like the A7S II I had, or an A7S III, FX3, Sony A1, which I'm using to film this on, when you're working with a small camera like that, especially if it's pretty stripped down, IBIS can be a godsend, because if you're going and shooting handheld, you'll have the same experience I had with the A7S, which is you're going to have a lot of shakiness. Now, there's a little bit better lenses today that have Lens-IS, like the 24-105 f/4 by Sony, but you'll find that there's still not a lot of image-stabilized lenses on the market, especially when it comes to quality glass. Unfortunately, most quality lenses on the market do not have image stabilization unless you're talking about some sort of a long prime or long zoom, a 7200, 100 to 400, 400 to 8, 300 to 8, 600 f4. Those will have it, but those are photo lenses. And they have the IS, and it's fantastic in the lens for shooting photographs, especially if you're shooting a moving or slowly moving subject and you want to decrease your shutter speed, lens IS can really help you there. But when it comes to video and you're looking at more common lenses like a 35 prime, 24 prime, 50 prime, 85 prime, 135 prime, 1635, 24 to 70. If you're looking at cinema lenses like the Angenu zooms or maybe like the Zeiss Cine primes, maybe the new Cook SB3s, those are all great lenses and none of them have image stabilization in them. And the same is true when you look at cinema cameras, right? Like the vast majority of cinema cameras do not have IBIS. Reds don't, Aries don't, the Canon C500, C300 series does not, the Sony Venice, Venice 2 does not, FX9, FX6 does not. Really, the only one that does currently is the Burano. And I'm going to get into later in this podcast why I think that might not be a good choice by Sony. But if you're wanting to work with the better cinema cameras and the better lenses, you pretty much are cutting yourself out of any sort of image stabilization anyway. So even if you wanted image stabilization, the vast majority of higher end cinema cameras or video cameras and better lenses don't have it. And so if you're wanting to grow in your career, you can't be chained by image stabilization. You got to learn to take the training wheels off. And so my first argument on a case against image stabilization is if you are reliant upon it, then when you start working with better cameras, more expensive cameras, and better lenses, you're not going to have it. And so if you've got to learn at this point in your career, whether you're just starting out or whether you've been doing it for 10 years, if you're reliant on image stabilization, you've got to learn to break those chains. Because otherwise, it's like having training wheels that you never attempt to take off. And by the time you get a project where you do need to run a more proper cinema camera and you do need to run better glass and you need to shoot handheld, you're not going to know what to do. So my first argument against image stabilization is learning how to take the training wheels off, because the better cameras and the better lenses for the most part don't have it. My other argument against it is when I was working with these IBIS cameras like the A7S II, A7S III, A7R II, A7R III, all those cameras, it was helpful to have IBIS when you're working with a really small camera like that. However, IBIS creates a problem. And that problem is when you're moving to the right, for example, let's say you're shooting handheld and you're moving the camera to the right, you're intentionally moving the camera to the right, whether you're following action or whatever the case may be, but the sensor, the IBIS, is trying to correct for that because it thinks that that's bad movement and it's going to do the opposite of what you do. So if you're going to the right, it's going to try to go to the left to try to make up for what you're doing to the right to try to stabilize it. Even though you're intentionally moving to the camera to the right, it doesn't know that. It doesn't have a brain. It's not you. It's just detecting motion and it's going in the opposite direction to balance it out. And the issue with that is you can see it in the footage where if you're moving the camera around, you can watch IBIS at work trying to catch up with you. And it's like thinking about it and you can watch it sometimes jerk to the right or jerk to the left as it's trying to catch up. And then you'll kind of watch it move around and then slowly settle in place. And that's not good. You would never see that on a high-end production. Go watch any Netflix series today. Go turn on any local television station. You're not going to see that because one, again, higher end cinema cameras and higher end glass doesn't have image stabilization anyway. And two, even if it did, most cinematographers at that level wouldn't want it because you can't control it, right? It's got a mind of its own and it's just trying to fix, or at least it's thinking it's fixing whatever it is that you're doing. And you can see that in action. And as you mature in your career and you start to notice it, you can't unsee it. And that's what happened to me when I started working with the FS7 back in 2016. I got away from IBIS. I had gotten used to it, but then I got away from it and because I had a camera, didn't have it. And what I would notice is my footage looked more organic. And when I started going back to shots with the A7S, because I still had that A7S II as a B cam, I would all of a sudden start, I could start to see image stabilization at work. And it took me moving to a camera that didn't have it to when I looked back at footage I had shot previously, or even that I was still shooting with the A7S, to finally see the difference. And then once I saw it, I couldn't unsee it. And I still see it today in work, because sometimes I still use IBIS, and I'm going to give you a recent example here in a minute. But when you see it, it's awful. It's not, maybe most audience won't see it, and hopefully that's the case, but it's not something that you want in your work, where the image is trying to like correct itself and catch up with you and settle in place. Like, that's not good. Lens.is does the same thing. When I worked with the FS7 and I wanted to shoot with a 100 to 400, I had a Canon L2 100 to 400, and that had Lens.is, which I really liked, because when I would shoot on the FS7 with the Canon 100 to 400 using an adapter, you know, the FS7 was a Super 35 camera, so you're getting a little bit of a crop. So the focal length equivalent is 600 millimeters if you're comparing it to a full frame field of view. So that's a pretty good range, right? But when you're zoomed in, obviously, the more zoomed in you are, the more magnified camera shake is. So on the FS7, I really appreciated that the Canon lens I ran at the time had Lens.is, because I could like follow a white-tailed deer, for example, and work the focus and have my hand on the tripod's handle, and I never had camera shake, and I loved it. And when I moved over to Sony Glass, I moved to Sony Glass in 2018 because they finally started coming out with their G Master line. And when I moved over to the Sony Glass and I bought the G Master 100 to 400, the Lens.is on that didn't work like the Canon. The way the Sony works is it detects when you're on a tripod automatically, and it cuts the image stabilization off, because in theory, you don't want image stabilization on when on a tripod. And I hated that, because I was so used to working with the FS7 and the Canon lens that had image stabilization that always was working. So I always had it on, but now my Sony G Master lens didn't have that. It would detect I was on a tripod and it would turn off. And the only way to make it turn on is to like shake the tripod around to wake it up, to make it think it wasn't on a tripod. And then it would start to work. But then as soon as you settled your tripod down, it would detect that it was on a tripod again and cut back off. And so when I was working with the 100, 400 G Master Sony lens, and I still have that lens, I all of a sudden didn't have image stabilization when I was on a tripod anymore. And this goes back to the training wheels thing. I wasn't quite ready for that. And so when I would touch the lens, or if I touched the tripod, or if I was trying to follow action, my work had a lot of shake in it. And I was so frustrated by that. And I was actually angry at Sony. I was like, this is stupid. I want your lens to work like the 100, 400 for Canon. Image stabilization should always be on unless I turn it off. I don't want this auto detect tripod thing. But I look back at that and I think that's silly, because now, even if it had image stabilization that always was active, I'd turn it off today, because now I've learned how to compensate for that. And what I've noticed is, when I look back at my old work where I did have the Canon lens, I can now, again, it goes back to once you see it, you can't unsee it, but I can now see that lens's IS at work. I can see if I was following that white tailed deer, I can see the Lens.is kicking in and following the deer. And as I settle the tripod down, I can watch it catch up to me, and I can watch the image float and settle into place. And I didn't notice it at the time because I was so used to it. But now that I don't have Lens.is that's active on my tripod anymore, and I haven't for 6 years, but now that I don't have that, I look back at my old shots and I'm like, oh gosh, that actually wasn't good. And so at the time I thought it was amazing, but now that I've matured in my career, I look back, I'm like, man, that's not good. I don't need this image to be catching up with this deer and then floating into place. You would never see that on a Nat Geo shoot, right? So how do you fix that though? Like, how do you work without image stabilization on long lenses, for example? Well, it all comes down to proper rigging and proper camera technique. So we'll take the 100, 400, for example. Now that I have a lens and have had a lens for 6 years that doesn't work with IS on a tripod anymore, I've had to learn how to get stable footage without the training wheels of image stabilization. So what I've learned to do is, on my FX6, which is what I shoot with now, I use a base plate and I run rails underneath the 100 to 400. And then I take a wooden camera lens support, and I bolt it, and this is important, but I bolt it into the bottom of the lens. Now, how I do that is, on the 100 to 400, if you take the lens foot off, you'll reveal on the Sony lens, a quarter 20 hole. And so what I do with this wooden camera lens support is, instead of using the Y bracket, I use the quarter 20 support, which it comes with as one of the options in that kit. And by locking in a quarter 20 lug into the bottom of the lens and then clamping that into this lens support and then clamping that to rails, which are bolted to the camera, everything is now bolted together. Now, the reason why that's important is all a lens is doing on a Y bracket is just resting there. But when you're bolting the camera to the lens support and that is bolted to or attached to rails, which are bolted to the camera, all of a sudden it's like you have bolted everything together. And by doing that, you no longer have any flex happening in the front of the lens. Because if you think about it, if you have a 7200, a 100, a 400, anything like that, if it's hanging off the end of the camera, it's just hanging by the lens mount itself. So you have all this weight up front that's just barely hanging on by the lens mount in the back. And so if you touch the lens, naturally it's going to vibrate. Even if it's just small vibrations, it'll be enough to show up in your footage. So by bolting it to the camera, especially because the bolting point is further up from the lens mount, you've now created an entire system that's completely bolted together. So if you touch it, there's none of those micro vibrations. And so if you do it in a Y support bracket, it'll give you some of those benefits, but it's not bolted together, so it can still move on the Y bracket. That's why I say bolting is important. But by bolting it all together with lens support, I now no longer have those micro vibrations. Plus, I use a better tripod today. I use a Sockler Flowtech 100 sticks, which have a 100 millimeter bowl, and I have a FSB 10, which is a 100 millimeter bowl fluid head. And I have that as my setup. And when I run my 100 to 400 bolted to my FX6 on that beefier tripod, I can touch and pull focus all day long. I can touch the handle of my tripod all day long, and I no longer have any camera shake in my footage at all. It wasn't lens IS that fixed it. It was proper camera technique and proper rigging. And now when I look at my work today, it looks way better than it ever did with the Canon lens, because I don't have that floaty effect. I don't have anything trying to correct or fix my movements. I just have a pure organic look where the camera is following the action and is staying on it in real time, and the image is not trying to catch up with it. So it looks way more professional. I was forced to take the training wheels off, and I had to learn how to ride my bike without it. And now that I've learned that the process, my results are significantly better. So what I thought was a flaw with the Sony lens actually ended up being a great thing, because it forced me to learn good camera technique for filming with long lenses. The same is true when shooting handheld with more medium or wider focal length lenses. So I shoot a lot of handheld in my work. I love shooting handheld. I like the look and feel of it. And I had the FS7, now I have the FX6, and those cameras, again, do not have any sort of IBIS or digital image stabilization going on in camera. And again, all the best glass, for the most part, doesn't have image stabilization either. So if I'm filming with a 51.2 prime, a 35, a 24, 24-70, 16-35, any of those things, if I'm renting Cine glass, none of that has image stabilization at all. So again, I've been forced to learn how to shoot handheld without the crutch of image stabilization, which again is good, because it means that I'm no longer having to deal with these training wheels. So I'm comfortable working any camera handheld, so long as it's rigged properly, and any lens as well. So now that I'm working without image stabilization on my handheld footage, I feel like the shots are way more organic and way more natural, and I no longer see that floaty correctiness. I will say that there still is a time and place for image stabilization. And a good example of this is last year, I got hired by a nonprofit called Explore Austin, and they're based out of Austin. And they take kids and teach them about the outdoors. You go through a six-year program from sixth grade to 12th grade if you're a kid, and these are for primarily underprivileged kids. And what they do is they get assigned a team, and then they have a mentor that stays with them all 6 years in the program. And these kids learn different things about outdoor recreation. Like 1 year, they'll be learning all about canoeing and kayaking. 1 year will be all about camping. 1 year will be all about rock climbing. 1 year will be all about whatever. They learn all these different techniques. and all these different things. And then they go out in the summer on these big wilderness trips across the US where they get to practice or perform the things that they've been learning throughout the year. And so they wanted to do this mission video for the organization, but they're a nonprofit. And so the budget wasn't huge, right? Because most of the money that they earn, they're trying to put towards kids being able to enter in and do this program because it's 100% free for the kids. So when they hired me to do this mission video, I knew that there was no budget for me to bring a crew. It was going to be me by myself. And I also knew that in order to do this mission video, I was going to have to go out with these kids when they're rock climbing, mountain biking, canoeing, camping, stuff like that, and be able to get shots, B-roll shots of them out performing these different things. And so for me to do that, I decided to run the FX3 over my FX6. And the reason why is because I knew that I could take the FX3 apart and have it down to just this little bitty body, but I could still bring a monitor and I could still bring a V-mount and all that stuff, but I could break it all down and throw it all into pockets in a backpack and I could hike in with the kids. And when we got to the destination, I could pull it out, put it together in like a minute and be off and ready to shoot. Plus, I could bring a gimbal and I could have the FX3 and run it on the gimbal without having to bring an additional camera or anything like that. So I brought the FX3 strictly because of its size and weight. And I did take it out on several trips with these kids and filmed a whole bunch of stuff with them. But because I'm using my FX3, which is a smaller camera, I had to use IBIS. Because my FX3, I have it kind of rigged out. I've got a V-mount battery on the back, and I've got, which is like a 99-watt battery, and I've got a small HD monitor up front, and I've got a shotgun mic and a top handle. But it's still really lightweight. Like in the grand scheme of things, that's not a heavy camera. I mean, that's why I chose to use it for this project, because I was shooting by myself, no crew, hiking in with kids. But unfortunately, because it's smaller and lighter, it means that if I shot without image stabilization, I'm having more risk of seeing shake in my footage. And I knew I needed to run a 24-70 over something wider because I needed to be able to zoom in on the kids as they did different things. And the point of that is when you are shooting handheld, the wider the focal length, the easier it is to get away from camera shake. But in this case, sometimes I had to go out to 70 millimeters. So I knew because I'm using a smaller system, I needed to be able to run up to 70 millimeters at times. I knew because of that, I'm just going to have to flat out use IBIS. And I did. I used IBIS a lot. Pretty much the entire project for the most part was shot handheld, except for some drone shots and some GoPro shots I got. And the mission video came together. We finished it last week, and they played it at the University of Texas this week, a couple nights ago, at this big fundraising gala that I attended. And there was hundreds and hundreds of people there. And there were two big screens, and they played the mission video that night in an attempt to use it among some speeches and things to help raise over $500,000, which they were able to do. But when they played that video, I'm watching it on the big screen, and I know most people probably don't see this, but myself as a professional who's been doing this for a while and has a trained eye, I'm seeing image stabilization at work in this mission video. I can see it moving around and trying to catch up with me and then settling into place. And I saw it over and over again because I shot the whole thing handheld. So it's constantly happening in the video. Now, I don't think most people who watched that noticed that. And if they did, then they weren't paying attention to what was being said and the statements and all that, which means I didn't do my job. But I don't think that was the case. I think most people were pretty engaged. They gave it an ovation afterward. And I don't think people who watched it probably really cared. But I could not stop staring at my image settling into place. And to me, it felt not natural and not organic. I didn't want to do that. I just had to, because I'm running a smaller system in the backcountry. It is what it is. But when it comes to things like commercial work or higher end projects, there's no way I would have used the FX3 handheld with IBIS in a scenario like that. Instead, I would have used a more proper camera without having the training wheels of image stabilization. A good example is last week I was in East Texas shooting a commercial for Cowboy Trailer Sales. They've been a client of mine for several years. And we were shooting a 60-second ad. It's going to be a 60-second ad and a 30-second ad. So we're making two ads out of the same story, essentially, just a longer version and a shorter version. This will be televised on local TV networks, and it will be played at rodeos on the Jumbotrons, and will also be obviously on social media, things like that. So this is a commercial shoot, and we had a child actor, we had adult actors. So it was a pretty cool shoot. The idea of this project was to show a kid who is one day, like he's wanting to one day become grown up and ride horses in a cutting show, which is, if you don't know what that is, it's basically in a rodeo where people are cutting calves. And it's a really cool thing. You can win a lot of money doing it. There's usually a crowd. It's an awesome professional it's a style of rodeo, essentially, for lack of better words. But because it's a horse trailer business and a lot of their clients come from the cutting horse or rodeo crowd, I wanted to show, I wrote the script where I wanted to show a little boy who was dreaming of doing that one day and then showing him as an adult actually doing it. So what we did is we had this little boy, he had, we had him driving in on this beautiful ranch that we got access to with this big, beautiful barn. And we had him driving out on the ranch out to a pasture in a kid's, like a black kid's truck. And he's pulling a little kid's trailer called Ranch and Rigs. It's actually a sister company to Cowboy Trailer Sales, where they make this cool trailer, horse trailer, called Ranch and Rigs, and it's for kids. But it's a legit, like, welded together metal trailer that works with these kids' trucks. Anyway, I had this kid pulling this truck and pulling this kid's horse trailer out to this field. We had a young brown foal horse out in the field, and he was going up and getting the horse and pulling it and acting like he was getting ready to go out and pretend to be cutting horses. We even had the name of the stadium, Will Rogers Stadium, hand painted on a sign, like the kid had painted that together, hoping to go out and pretend to be riding this young foal in an arena, the Will Rogers Arena. And then later on in this commercial, we show that kid grown up as an adult, and he's backing a large version of that same horse, an adult horse, out of a horse trailer. A legit horse trailer by Cowboy Trailer Sales, and his name is being called in the intercom, and you see a shot of the Will Rogers Stadium, and he's entering the arena to cut horses professionally. Essentially, he's lived out his dream. So this is a commercial project. We had some actors. We had access to go film at the Will Rogers Stadium, got media passes, and went and filmed there during the professional cutting horse show this past week during the finals. We also got access to film at this beautiful ranch. So we had all these moving parts. This is a straight up commercial shoot. And in a shoot like this, I wanted it to be 100% handheld, because the idea is to show some life to this, right? I don't want this to feel commercial, or I mean, I didn't want it to feel corporate. I wanted it to feel real, true, raw, and organic. So I decided to shoot the thing 100% handheld. The only time that there were not handheld shots were the two drone shots, one at the very beginning that established the ranch we were on, and one about halfway through that showed the Will Rogers Stadium. Outside of that, we were 100% handheld for the shoot. So to help me shoot handheld, I use the FX6, and my FX6 is kind of rigged out. It's got a 90 watt battery in the back, and then behind that is a 99 watt V-mount battery on a wooden camera V-mount sled. So I've got two batteries in the backside, adding a ton of weight to the back of the camera. Then I've got a small HD monitor, a Cine 5 up front. I've got a Sennheiser MKH 8060 shotgun mic on the other side. Of course, I've got the FX6 hand grip on. I've got a base plate. And then I ran a matte box. I ran all primes for this, all Sony G Master primes. I ran a 24, 35, 50, and 135. And then I used a matte box from Wooden Camera, and I had a 1/16 black pro mist filter in that matte box, which adds more weight. And also I like the 1/16 mist look. I don't like anything over 1/16 personally. I'm not super big into the overly bloomy look that you get with a lot of mist filters. I like a 1/16 because it does exactly what I want it to do, which is just knock down the harshness of skin tones. But I ran all that built together, which created a bunch of weight for the FX6 and helps it make it a bigger, heavier camera. And so it's a hefty camera at this point, and it's perfectly balanced. If I take my finger, my index finger, and I put it under the handle right where my hand will go, it'll be perfectly balanced there. So I have this perfectly balanced, relatively heavy camera system, and I'm using it with multiple points of contact. I've got my right hand in the FX6's hand grip. I've got my left hand under the lens barrel. I've got the camera tucked into my armpit. And then my fourth point of contact is an Easy Rig. Now, an Easy Rig by design is not designed to help you stabilize anything. An Easy Rig by design is designed to help you not get fatigued when shooting handheld or on the shoulder. And essentially what it does is it takes the weight of the camera and distributes it down your back and onto your hips. And that way you could shoot handheld all day long or from the shoulder all day long, and all the weight will be on your hips so you don't get tired or fatigued. But a byproduct that I have found of the Easy Rig is that it adds a fourth point of contact. plus, since you're not holding the camera, you're not struggling really. So you're holding this heavier camera and you're just cradling it at that point. And you have 4 points of contact, right hand, left hand, armpit, and easy brig. So 4 points of contact, you're not holding any weight, you're just cradling the weight. And by doing that, it creates a fourth point of contact and helps you have pretty stable handheld shots. So heavier, well-balanced camera, which is key, combined with 4 points of contact and just good camera technique. And by doing that, I was able to shoot handheld for the entire project and everything felt super organic. I had a shot, for example, of a cowboy, the grown-up kid, essentially pulling a saddle out of the back of the trailer. And I started on the ground. You just see the shadow of him carrying the saddle and handheld. I'm following the shadow, and then then all of a sudden the camera sees his boots, it goes up his jeans, and then reveals the cowboy with the saddle as he puts it on the horse. All that's handheld, for example. A lot of movement. And it looked fantastic. Absolutely loved it. Couldn't have been happier with the shot. And it felt so much more organic than IBIS or Lens IS ever would have given me, where it would have been trying to stabilize that the whole time and you'd get that floaty thing happening. There's none of that. It's just super organic, super raw, super natural, looked amazing. So I love shooting handheld for stuff like that. If you're going to go out in the backcountry and you need IBIS and you're going to run a smaller camera like the FX3, fine. Like I did it for that mission video. Fine. It's whatever. It is what it is. But on a higher end professional shoot, you don't want that. You want to have that natural organic look. And you don't want it to be stagnant either. Like you still want it to feel handheld. Otherwise you just put it on a tripod. So you want that handheld look. You just don't want shake. You want it to feel controlled, natural, organic, nice sways, and be able to follow the action and have it look real raw, but good and professional. And that's what you get with proper handheld technique, without relying on the training wheels and negative effects of image stabilization. Another reason I don't like image stabilization, or IBIS in particular, is IBIS is a potential issue for cameras. And what I mean by that is IBIS is all based on the sensor not being locked down. The sensor can float around and make up for your movements. The challenge with that, though, is when you're working with a camera that doesn't have a lockdown sensor, it is prone to having shakes or flops, the sensor flopping around when there's hard, harsh movements. Several years ago, back in 2016, I shot this project called Heart of the Hollow. It's still today one of my favorite projects, but there are two shots in there where the camera is mounted. I had an A7 R2 at the time mounted inside of a vehicle using a different suction cup mount thing that I had. And I had it filming the protagonist as he's driving down a gravel road of his ranch. And the gravel, the car moving on the gravel, jarred the camera so much that IBIS couldn't make up for it. And beyond that, the sensor started flopping around. And trying to fix that in post was a nightmare. And you can still kind of, if you watch that video back, you can still kind of see those micro vibrations even after I use warp stabilizer. The same is true. I mounted a camera to an airplane one time and the harsh movement of the airplane was more than what the sensor could keep up with. And so now the sensor is just starting to flop around. You can see this on a drone if you're flying something like a FreeFly Alta and you're mounting something like an A7S III to it. The jarriness of the drone can be more than what the sensor can keep up with, and now the sensor is just flopping around because it's not locked down. So these are bad things. If you're running with a camera, handheld, no gimbal, you're running with a camera, so you're filming football, and you've got a wide lens, and you're filming a football scene, and you're running with the action, you want it to be handheld, those harsh steps from you running could cause the sensor to flop around. And that's not good, which is why I'm surprised the Sony Burano got IBIS, to be honest with you. I think IBIS is great for smaller cameras like the FX3, for people like me who might work on a small project like I did for the mission video where you're packing into the backcountry and you need something like that. But on a bigger cinema camera, especially a camera like the Burano that's priced at $25,000, I'm kind of surprised they put IBIS in it, because now that $25,000 camera, which obviously is going to be used by bigger productions more than likely, has a sensor that's not locked down and is going to be prone to violent, harsh movement, causing the sensor to flop around. And I can't imagine most cinematographers working with a camera that expensive are going to want that. So I'm kind of surprised Sony put that in the Burano. Maybe an FX6, a future FX6, I could see it, because it's a cheaper camera. It's going to be used on lower to more mid-tier budget projects. Not to mention the fact that a lot of people might be using it on shoots by themselves. The FX3, obviously, I can see it having it. The Burano, I can't. So I'm a little surprised they put it in the Burano. But IBIS as you can imagine, or as I described, it's not perfect and it has issues beyond the floaty effect. Not having a lockdown sensor can be problematic. So these are my issues with image stabilization. They have their place. It's not that they're bad or awful. You know, I used it for this mission video the other day that I've been working on for the past year, but it has, while it has its place, it has a lot of limitations. It can force you to be chained, to be reliant upon working with cameras and lenses that have it, which again, aren't the vast majority of cinema cameras or best glass in the market. It can create the floaty feeling and the correctiness that you don't want, the unwanted movement that you don't want. It can take away from the organicness of handheld footage, and it could even be prone to violent movement if you're shooting something where there is going to be like a lot of action or movement. So those are my issues with image stabilization. It has its place, but I want to encourage you to learn to shoot without it, because honestly, you're going to get more organic looking footage that feels more professional, feels higher end. If you're out in the backcountry, you're out in the sticks, you're shooting handheld on a small camera, fine. But if you can't afford to, learn to shoot without image stabilization. Trust me, it is completely worth it. Thanks guys for listening to this episode of the Filming with Josh podcast. If you enjoyed it, please rate the podcast and leave a review for me. That just helps other people like yourself find the podcast. If you're not already subscribed to the podcast, please subscribe. And don't forget to go over to Filming with Josh on Facebook and ask to join the group today. I'll see you all there.
To learn more about Rustic River Media, visit us online at rusticriver.media. Thanks for listening to the Filming with Josh podcast. Catch every episode by hitting subscribe today.